Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah, and I'm your moderator. Today is Sunday, April 26, 2015. The share ID for Friday, April 24th, is 7501. That's 7501. This morning, A Vision for You presents, What's Thinking Got to Do with It? The Big Book teaches that to get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. The 12 steps, as outlined in the Big Book, represent a process resulting in a spiritual awakening, a psychic change sufficient to bring about recovery. We submit to a simple process that is not easy, yet takes us to a place we've never been. A spiritual way of life, a way of deep and lasting personal transformation. The results are disproportionate to our efforts, yet our efforts are required to sustain and enlarge it. Our psychic change is a gift that instills in us a new perspective, a new vision. We have changed in the way we think. We have changed in the way we feel. And we have changed in the way we behave. Joining us this morning is Haya P., recovered compulsive overeater from Denver, Colorado. She is dedicated to living the 12 steps every day, one day at a time. She is also dedicated to helping others understand how these 12 steps work and how they change lives. And welcome, Haya P.
Thank you so much, Leah. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. It's so hysterical. I'm sitting in my car because every room in my house is being utilized. I thought I would be able to be in my basement area, except I've got, I don't know, 5, 6, or 7, which sounds like 500, 600, or 700 12-year-old girls in my house. They are very loud. They're asleep now, thank God. So anyway, I'm sitting in my car in my beautiful driveway of Denver, Colorado, and, you know, I can think nothing more of what a great way to start the day than to be on the phone with all of you. And I want to welcome anyone who's new. Sometimes we have new people on the Sunday morning meeting, and I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about what it was like for me. I'll just say that because I really want to talk about the topic, and I want to thank Leah for asking me to speak today. I just want to find my watch. I have it here so I can keep track on time. Hang on 1 second. There we go. All right. I'll have an idea of how long I'm going here. So just suffice to say, I mean, I can remember going to food as a very, very, very young child. And, you know, I remember being fed to soothe me. I remember when my father died, I was a baby. And I have this memory of being fed. I mean, I was really a baby. I was like 6 months old. So, you know, in my early years, 1, 2, 3, you know, that's some of the memory that I have there. And anyway, I just really struggled with weight and, you know, you're so pretty if you had, you know, you have such a pretty face, if you would just lose weight. And I was put on diets and I learned all the tricks of, you know, making the results look okay by not eating the day I was going to get weighed. And I'm talking, I went on diet, you know, my first diet was in the fourth grade. And I struggled a lot with my weight. And then as I became a teenager, it became, you know, about my body and wanted to look good. And then I got into bulimia. And that was really difficult. What I understand now is what was difficult was living. And actually the bulimia, the eating and the... That was actually the solution. This I've come to understand is that that's what I was, you know, I, that's what I thought at some level could help me in the moment. And thank God I found Overeaters Anonymous 28 years ago. I'm 48. I found it actually 30 years ago, I think. I feel like I was 18 or 19, but I just turned 48. So, yeah, it was definitely more than 28 years ago. It was 30 years ago, 29 years ago, somewhere around there at a very young age. Was not what I was looking for, I'll tell you that much. But I saw something. And so you're listening to somebody who's been, you know, on this track for a long time. And, you know, when I was thinking about today and what I wanted to share today, even though I usually have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth, so I'm just trying to kind of pay attention to the feeling and see what feels like is right. When Leah asked me to speak and she said, you know, what would you like to speak about? My immediate thoughts came to, you know, this change of thinking. And that's something that I was pointed to very early on. I remember, you know, 20-something years ago, well, it must have been about 28 years ago, I was living in Los Angeles, and I was my sponsor. I actually also got sober right around the time that I started to pay attention to the 12 steps and OA. I was living in Portland, Oregon, and what I remember was women in the OA meeting saying that they were also alcoholic. And something about that made sense to me because I was in college and I could drink socially the way I really wanted to eat privately. Couldn't really eat in public the way I really wanted to or felt compelled to, I should say that. But it was really acceptable to drink with everybody. And I usually got, I remember saying to somebody, I know my limit, meaning I know that point where I could drink and still be in control of my senses and actions and pass that. And I said, and I go past it. Like there was, I wanted that feeling. I was, and now I understand why. I was doing the best I can, but I was at that time, which everybody is at every moment. That's what I'm, my understanding. And again, this is all my experience. I'm just sharing my experience with what the program, really what the big book has led me to. So I also got sober, which I'm really grateful for because it gave me a certain foundation in AA, which is, which was, I think, really was really a gift. Because I got this real foundation in what it is that we're trying to be pointing towards. So I remember my first sponsor, well, my very first sponsor in Portland, Oregon, would leave phone messages on my machine. We had machines, you know, real answering machines then, no cell phones. And she would say, "Hiya, this is Jana, slow down." You know, because I was like, I was really sped up trying to feel better. And I remember sitting on the steps of the meeting one day in August. I had told my family I wasn't coming home. I was going to stay in Oregon after college. And they were not very happy. And I remember sitting in August, and I remember thinking, I remember sitting with this woman, her name was Anne, and I remember saying to her, "What am I going to do? I have to go home for the Jewish holidays, and it's going to be crazy there, and I'm going to eat, and she looked at me, and she, like, put her hands on me, and she said, "Hiya, it's August 4th. It's not the middle of September. Where are you right now?" And there was something, I've never forgotten that, and I've tried to experience that feeling again. And I've had moments of that where I was at that moment. And I want to speak more about that today. But then I moved to California, and my sponsor there, I remember, gave me the 20 questions that they give people in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the questions, you know, they're 20 questions, and we have them in OA as well. I don't have them in front of me. But the questions are something like this. This is what I remember. Do you have problems in relationships due to drinking? Do you have problems on the job due to drinking? Do you have trouble sleeping well due to drinking? Like, these were the questions. Do you have trouble not drinking when you don't want to? Do you have trouble stopping once you start? So, do you have trouble stopping drinking once you start drinking, right? So these are all the questions, and they have to do with drinking. And so she said to me, I'm not so interested in your drinking. She said, cross out the word drink. Cross out the D-R in every sentence and put the word T-H in place of it. Do you lose sleep due to thinking? Do you have problems with your relationships due to thinking? And actually, I think it was your thinking, your drinking, right? Do you have problems due to relationships due to your drinking? So do you have problems in relationships due to your thinking? Do you have problems in relationships? Do you have problems on the job due to your thinking? Do you have trouble sleeping due to your thinking? And that was really eye-opening for me. And I really believe that is what the Big Book is pointing us towards. Because if you look carefully, they don't really talk about alcohol after the third step. It's really about our thinking. And it says we have to have a psychic change. What does that really mean, a psychic change? The way that I think, the way that I see the world. The fourth step, when we get to that fourth column, right, the bridge to the fourth column, which is where it says we turn back the list. We're going to look at it from a completely different angle, right? We saw the world really dominated us. Why did it dominate us? Because of my thinking. That's why it was dominating me, because of my thinking. In fact, the inventory process is not very interested in those first three columns once you get done with them, because it's really not about that. That was an illusion. That was how I saw the world based on my vantage point, based on the thinking, the best that I could do at that moment. So I kind of want to speak to that today, because I've had some experiences, and recently in the last half a year, I've had some really, I would say in the last several months, I started to see some new things that I believe is really a result of the 11th step, which is this continuing our relationship with God. And so I was looking in step 11, and I have to say, you know, I used to get really twisted when I would hear, you know, a special edition meeting, and I would hear a speaker, you know, long-term, that, you know, Leah and her, you know, the ladies and men and like whatever the visionaries who picked the people to speak. And I would get all twisted up inside when they would say something that maybe was outside of the scope of what the Big Book says, or in disagreement with an area of the Big Book. And it used to get me all twisted up inside, like, how could you do that? This is Big Book, you know, blah, 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 blah. You have to believe everything, blah, blah, blah. And, but I've had some of those experiences, and when I looked into, and at first it was like, it was scary to me, and it was confusing to me, and I was thinking, well, wait a second, it must be wrong if I have this different thought than maybe what the Big Book is saying. And then I read in A Vision for You where it says, our book is meant to be suggestive. We know only a little. God will constantly reveal more to you and to us. And so I was able to reconcile that's the point, as I understand it. And again, I can only share with you from my perspective, because that's really, as human beings, you know, you know, I see through the lens of my own thinking. However, there's a bigger thinker. There's the big thinker, the capital T. You know, we're all the little thinkers. But there's a big thinker. And that's what the Wilson experienced when he had that spiritual experience. And that's what I believe the big book is pointing us towards. And that's not like I believe it. I mean, it says it in the book. You know, it says in the personal stories, it says, it says in one of the forewords, in the foreword to the first edition, or the foreword to the second edition. I can't think of it. It's really early here. It's only 6:30 in the morning. You know, it tells us that they're going to give us stories, right? They're going to give us stories. Here it is. Hang on, let me see if I can find it, because it's nice hearing it straight from the book. And it says, Leia, if you can find the page for me, if you know it, I can't find it where it says, then we have personal stories where each person will tell you how they had their relationship with God. I don't know, I can't find it. Okay, I guess it's not meant to be at the moment. So, anyway, it tells us that's really what they're trying to do here, is point us toward this power greater than ourselves. That's the point, right? It says many times along the book, the point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines, right? That's the point. I remember I had a friend in program, her name was Tracy, and she'd go, "Hiya, it says the point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. That's the point." So what does that mean, to grow along spiritual lines? It means to have a new way of thinking. It means to be thinking about the big T, the big thinker, as opposed to me, Chaya, the little thinker. And by clearing out the wreckage of my past, so the behaviors that I demonstrated in my past, and sometimes today, still, because I'm human, are always a result of actions, right? Those actions were always a result of how I was feeling in the moment based on how I was thinking in the moment, right? So if I'm thinking that you did me wrong, that makes me feel very angry and feel self-justified and feel resentful, right? Even though whatever you did or think you did was already happened, so it's gone and done, and I'm thinking, I'm letting that just simmer in my head, in my brain. And that clogs me up from any new thoughts that can come in. That clogs me up from the divine wisdom, whatever you want to call it. You know, in OA and the 12 steps, we don't put a name on it, although they call it God. You can call it good orderly direction, you know. You can call it whatever you want. But there is, you know, we agree that there is some power greater than ourselves. Whatever it is that's fueling the breath I take every day, that's fueling, that made it rain this morning but made it sunny yesterday, you know, that energy, that whatever it is, I call it God. And let me tell you, that was like creepy to me when I came to the program, that people talked about God. I thought it was weird. I grew up very, I just didn't have God in my house. It wasn't a word that we really talked about. I grew up very culturally in my religion, as opposed to spiritually. And so it was very weird for me when they talked about God. I ran out of the room, actually, at first. But I did see something. There was something there that I couldn't put my finger on. And they talked about this God empowering than yourself. So I pointed myself in that direction. And I believe that's what the 12 steps is trying to do, is to point us in this direction and make me a vessel, make me able to tap into that capital T, big thinker, where new thoughts come in, where new ideas come in, where the idea that Bill Wilson had to call the churches and ask if they knew any drunks that he can help, as opposed to walk into the bar and either sit there and drink a ginger ale or even pick up some alcohol, right? That he it said it. Actually, I was reading Bill's story last night. I was reviewing it, and it says in his story, which I thought was so fascinating. You know, every time I read it, I see something else. And it said, should have made little markers in my book, but I can't tell the markers anymore because there's so much writing on here. But it says his thought changed. His sanity returned. What is sanity? One of the earliest things I was asked to do is just look up the word sanity. Soundness of mind. Soundness of mind. Sound mind. It means I'm thinking properly. That I'm thinking more on the plane of inspiration as opposed to this personal thinking that I have. I was thinking more in a bigger space. So the first step tells me, clearly you got a problem here, because whenever you pick it up, you kind of keep going. Now I really do think that when I pick it up, I know I'm going to keep going. I'm trying to feel better. And the book tells us this, right? It says in the doctor's opinion, sorry for anyone who's in their big book and following along with me, we're jumping all over the book. But it says here, men and women on the bottom of XXVIII, men and women eat, it says drink, but we could say eat because this is OA, eat essentially because they like the effect produced by it. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate between the true from the false. To them, their food addict life, compulsive eating life, seems the only normal one. They're restless, irritable, and discontented. Okay? Restless, irritable, and discontented is personal thinking all jumbled up in my head, as I understand it. It's that personal stuff, me, I, right? The I, he did this to me, or I deserve this, or I'm afraid of this, or why is God doing this to me, right? Unless it can again experience the sense of ease and comfort by which comes at once by taking a few drinks, at once. So at once it happens. It doesn't happen only once it affects my system and the craving continues. At once that comes. Eating and eating food that they see other people can do with impunity, right? And then they come to the desire, and then they're in a spree, and then they want to stop, because why do they want to stop? They get some sanity back. That cast, that, this is my experience, right? That, you know, I heard such a great thing, which is, you know, if you want to know why anybody ever does anything, there's one reason why any person does anything they do. And that is because it seems like a good idea at the time. And then maybe it wasn't such a good idea, right? Maybe it wasn't such a good idea. You know, I just thought I would have a little, you know, or I figured I'll start tomorrow, or I just couldn't cope with that situation without eating this. I needed it. Whatever it was, it seemed like a good idea at the time, right? And then when they look back on it, what do they say? What do I say? Right? Here's always the answer. And don't believe me. Like, think about it for yourself. What was I thinking? What was I thinking when I, you know, when I picked that up? What was I thinking when I was hanging out with that group of people? What was I thinking when I talked to my husband that way? What was I thinking? Usually my thinking was, and what the four steps tries to show us, is my thinking was really off base. And so that process of, so that step one is like, okay, so like don't start, you know, like, because once you start, it's going to, and what it teaches me is, and it, and the big book talks about this, is our real problem is in our mind, right? Like Olivia always gives the example of her kids who are allergic to fish, you know, like they don't need Tuna Anonymous to not eat fish. They just know they can't eat fish, because if they eat fish, it's going to be like they'll go, what was I thinking, you know, because they know what's going to happen if they eat fish. So they don't need a program to get them to not have that. So clearly, it's not the physical problem that's the problem. If you have a physical allergy to something, just don't have it. There are many people I know that, you know, once they eat sugar, they know that they're going to want more. So they just either have little or they just stop. Like, they, or they just don't have it at all. It's not like, so what's the problem, really? The problem is, and the big book tells us this isn't me. This is the book. It says, so our problem is mainly in our mind. Right? That's the problem. The problem is in our mind. And why would I even go back if I know, well, it seems like a good, seems like a good idea at the time, really, based on my thinking. And that's why the second step says there's a bigger thinker. There's a bigger picture. There's a power greater than me that can restore me to sanity, that can help me to think in a different way, that can have me, that psychic change. And we're going to point you toward that. That's the whole point. The point is to grow along spiritual lines. So the third step says, point yourself in that direction. Say, I want more of this. And, you know, ask anyone. I mean, many of you on the line, there might be, I have no idea who I'm speaking to. So, and who I will be speaking to, as this will be archived and people can access it. So, you know, I'm imagining there's some old timers who, you know, have been around a long time and are free from, you know, the obsession of going back, and they, you know, and then there's a lot of old timers. I get calls, I would say at least, I'll be on the very generous side and say once a week. Okay, I'll be on the very conservative side, I should say, once a week, of people who've been in program for years and years and are still struggling with some facet of either food, or they've transferred to some other addiction, which I believe is really the same addiction. It's the same thing we're trying to do, which is feel better in the moment. You know, and then there might be people who are brand new, or there might be people who are just in the midst of the steps. And so wherever you are, you know, hopefully you'll be able to identify it, whatever place you can. So step three says, you know, like, whatever you see, if you see something, like, if you can see that there is a power, give it over. Because why? Because you're thinking, right? It describes it, right? It describes it in how it works. It describes our thinking and why it makes sense. Why it makes sense to maybe point ourselves, right? Right? It says, you know, we've come to some ideas, right? They've made some clear that I can't manage my own life based on the way I'm thinking. Like, it's not working. That's A. B, that probably nobody else is going to be able to do this for me. Why? Because you're all just human people too that have your own way of seeing things. And then C, that this power, God, could and would, if he were sought, if he were looked towards, if he were sought, if you seek after God or power or this big capital T, thinker, or wisdom, or creative intelligence, spirit of the universe, whatever, all those different things that Bill uses as a way of describing the indescribable, I don't know any grammar experts out there, the indescribable, what we can't describe. It's impossible to describe something that doesn't have a form. You know, it comes into form through my thoughts. That's how I experienced it. So it tells me I'm at step three, and I'm going to point myself. And then it says the first requirement is that I'm convinced that life run on self-will, self-thought, is not going to be successful. Because why? Because I'm only dealing with what I already know. Right? Self, like, it's already what I know. There's no new thinking coming in. If I'm basing it on self-will, it's my thinking. How is my thinking going to get me out of thinking? My personal thinking. So it convinces me, you know, I'm trying to live and I'm living through my own lens. So why do I want the show? Why am I trying to arrange the lights and the scenery and the ballet? Because it looks to me like this is how it should be based on the way I think. It's not wrong how I think. It's just that this is how I've been thinking, whether it's learned thinking, patterns of thinking, habits of thinking, what I was taught. It doesn't matter. This is the way I think right now. And so this is how I see the world. And the book is telling me it probably isn't working out so well. Right? If it landed me up here. Because even when my motives are good, I'm, you know, so many people, like, I'm trying my best, and yet what, and I can go on if I had the time, on I can give you examples of where, and maybe it's helpful to give examples, but like, you know, let's just talk about the example of wanting someone else to have this program, right? But don't you see, there's hope here, and if you would only do this, and it would be so beneficial to you. But the problem is, I'm seeing it through my lens, not through their lens. I can't see it through their lens. I can only try to imagine what it might be to be coming from their place. And how do I do that is by listening to them. They'll tell me what they're thinking. Right? Then I can get a better understand. That's why the fifth step is really all about listening. So you can listen and getting to know somebody. The big book talks about, you know, the way the big book talks about working with others is very different than the way people work with others very often. Because we're trying to, like, jam it to people and, like, give it to them. And the book is telling us, like, all you could do is point people towards this and let them see for themselves. Everyone gets to have their own spiritual awakening. I can't give you... Let me see how I want to say this. You can't have my spiritual awakening. I'd love to give it to you, but it doesn't mean anything to you. It's got to be yours, and I couldn't force that awakening. Now, Bill Wilson had an experience, which is very interesting, and then we develop more and more, and that's what the 11th step does. So, just going back, step three is giving me these reasons, right? I want this for you. I want this for you. That's a good motive. I want this for my children. Oh, my gosh, right? I'm a mother of five kids. Like, wow. And this new understanding that I have has really freed me up because the new understanding I have, which I always, like, wanted to understand, but I didn't really have the level of understanding is, really, 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 really trusting that just like I am connected to that source, that it's deep down within me, it's deep down within you too. And that you have an inner, you know, GPS, so to speak, that will guide you. And that has just given me so much freedom. It gave me freedom, you know, it gives me freedom in working with others. It gives me freedom in my coaching practice, it gives me freedom with my children, it gives me freedom with my husband, because, yeah, I want to arrange the lights and the scenery, because even my motives are good, but here's the thing, you're seeing a totally different ballet than me, and they're seeing a totally different ballet, and guess what, they have a different, they're going to have different experiences than me because they're a different human being. They think just like I do. They have that power source like I do. But they're coming from their position. So, and what does it tell us? It tells us, you know, it says, you know, aren't I just a victim of the delusion that I can rest satisfaction and happiness if everybody would just do as I wished, right? First of all, everyone's not going to do as I wish, so that's a delusion. And then the other delusion is if everybody did as I wish, I'd be happy, right? Except that doesn't work because I've had people do things that I wanted and I wasn't necessarily happy. Or guess what? They did what I want, but then the next thing comes on, the next thing rolls through my brain. The next day, the next event, right? Life is a contact sport, full contact. You know, it's going to keep going. It's going to go up and down, ups and downs. You know, the 12 and 12 talks about the ups and downs that people go through in life and that people have been able to stay connected even through those. You know, what that's life. Life is ups and downs, but I can go through those ups and downs connected to that source. And I have gone through ups and downs and been able to go through it in a very different way than ever before. Certainly not having to binge or purge or do things like that. So, and then it gives us some action to do. And it's telling us, it's giving us, now there's a lot of interesting history. What's actually in the book is not exactly what actually Bill and Bob necessarily did. So I've also been able to become unattached to specifically doing it exactly how it says, because what it's trying to do is giving us here just something, a specific way to do it, so that, because people like to be told what to do, right? And also this way it gives us some kind of format to produce or to help produce what it's trying to produce, which is to clear out that stuffed up pipe that's not allowing this wisdom from the power greater than myself to flow through me. Although it definitely flows through at some level, right, that somebody would even point themselves in this direction, that somebody would even want and see something here beyond, you know, a weight loss. Because this is like way beyond, this is like so beyond weight loss. I mean, let me tell you, I'm just looking at my time. Okay, we're fine. So, well, let me just say this, and then the action steps are basically saying we want you to see that the way you were thinking is not actually true. That's the whole point. It's saying that your resentments are really just thinking about the past that's already gone. So it's like you're using your current thinking moment to crowd your brain with thoughts of something that already happened. So now my current state of thinking is based on old stuff, right? Which, like, and then fear is my current state of thinking is based on stuff that hasn't even happened yet, right? So now, so you see, like, you can't even possibly get new ideas and get this flow of, can't connect to that source in that space because it's all, like, filled with either what's already happened or what might happen, you know, or I'm guilty about harms I've caused others. So that's, like, also crowding. That's like, I'm not a human being and what do I do? And da, da, da. And so this process allows us to get some of that stuff out. Some people write it. Some people just speak it. There's lots of discussion. There's lots of history in AA, in the originals of how it was done. And then you share with another person, God, because what does that do? That makes me realize I'm not could it possibly be that Chaya Parkoff is the only person in the world ever to have experienced this kind of thinking? No. So when you get in the room with another person, it's not so that they can tell me what to do or clear it up for me or straighten me out. How helpful is it when someone tries to straighten you out? How receptive are you, really, you know? But instead, to be able to go, yeah, I get it. You know, and then to find out, like, it's just the human condition to have some of these thoughts, especially if we don't know that there's another way or that my thoughts are not real. It's just what I'm experiencing in the moment based on what I've got in my brain and that it passes. That's been the most freeing thing. And that's what step 11 teaches us. So we go through this process to just free us up to be like, wow, I'm not. Oh, wow, and look at this, you know, the character, defects of my character, it means like the part of my humanness that doesn't work so well for me, that I don't want to nurture. I don't want to nurture self-justification. I don't want to nurture manipulation. I don't want to nurture resentment. I don't want to nurture judgmentalness. I don't want to nurture that. I don't want to point myself toward that. I want to point myself toward the other stuff, the good stuff, the stuff that feels good, the stuff that does good, the stuff that connects well with other people. That's what I want to point towards. And that's what it's showing us in the defects of character, saying, God, take all of me, because that's what I am. I'm a human, right? It says, take all of me, the good and the bad, step 7, right? Now, I can tell you, I don't know about anybody here, but, like, I still will have a thought come through my head that's judgmental. I know it because of the way it feels. That's my barometer. Or anxiousness, or judgmentalness, or anger, or self-righteousness. That all will come through me, but I don't want to nurture that. I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it now. I understand that in this very next moment, a new idea is going to come in. And that's, so 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, hey, if I've hurt somebody, you know what, I probably should repair it, because then it doesn't have to swirl around in my head anymore. And it's the right thing to do. If you hurt somebody, help, you know, harm, you know, if you harm someone, fix it. Now, if I harm them in my head, I didn't harm them, because it's not real. Right? But if I actually did something that was harmful, fix it if I can. And if I can't, learn from it. Right? What's the lesson maybe that I can learn and have some compassion? And those action steps did. And then it says in step 10, like, continue to do this. Now, personally speaking, I will tell you that, and kind of bringing us up to date, I really felt like I was on a hamster wheel. Like, if I just keep doing this, I got to keep doing this, and we have a life. If you don't do this, you're going to go back and eat. And so I've been on this, you know, this pursuit of personal growth all these years, and with all good intentions, quite frankly. And what I realized for me, and I remember, it's so interesting, because I remember years ago, I was still in my old house, so it must have been like 14, 13 years, no, around the time my son was born, so he's going to be 10, so maybe like 9 years ago, I remember that my sponsor at the time, and I was telling, you know, I was saying, giving her like this major evening review that I was doing, you know, and she was like, oh my God, who would want to, like, you know, spend time in like, so I realized I kind of got the evening review wrong. And the step 10, like, I'll be honest with you, I don't now, whereas I used to, like, okay, if I had a judgmental thought, oh my God, I got to call somebody, and I got to talk about it, I got to ask God to remove it and talk about it. And now what I realize, it's just a thought in the moment, it's not real. And I point myself toward the next thought, you know, realizing, oh wow, that's interesting. I guess my thinking is a little off. See, if I'm being judgmental, it's just telling me that my thinking is not on the plane of inspiration. Why do I know that? Because step 11 tells me, hang on, this I can find easily. Right, so it tells us, right, so we said any new mistakes. I entered the world of the spirit, and my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for a lifetime. So continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they crop up, you know, let it go, essentially, is what it's telling me. Now, what I do is I started to realize that if I'm looking for that, I'm going to find it all day long. In fact, I'm going to create it all day long if I'm looking. So I actually started looking more towards the good feelings and the connectedness and the joy for someone else, the happiness for other people's good. It's allowed me to stay in the moment. I was trying to be in the moment, and I realized by trying to be in the moment, I wasn't actually in the moment, because you can only be in the moment when you're in the moment. So, why turn my thoughts to someone else I can help? Because that gets me out of my own personal thinking. When I'm thinking about somebody else, right? And then it describes these promises, which I will tell you that I now have experienced in real time, in and constantly, right? I'm not fighting. And some of you that know me personally know, like, I've struggled with, like, do I weigh all my food? Do I not weigh all my food? You know, like, I don't eat. There's certain things I just don't eat anymore. I haven't eaten them for years. But, like, and I've had some food allergies. And, like, should I have, like, a lot of thought around around what's right and what's wrong. And then what I started to notice, what was so interesting for me, and this is where this 11th step has really, like, rocketed me into a whole new place. And I hope I continue to be rocketed into the next place. As you know, until for 120 years, as long as, you know, God willing, I'll live to 120, is so an interesting thing is I moved to Colorado a year and a half ago. I started running a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago. I started jogging. Love it, love it, love it. And suddenly, and I really mean suddenly, without any change, around the time I moved to Colorado, I just remember it was around that time, suddenly, literally suddenly, I've been maintaining a weight for years and years and years, look great, were, you know, just like really healthy. And suddenly, out of nowhere, simultaneously, and guys, you can hold your ears for a second if you want to, but simultaneously, I lost about 10 pounds. My weight dropped suddenly. And I also was like thrown into menopause and or perimenopause, whatever it's called, where I wasn't getting my cycle. I got it once in a year and a half. And so, like, I lost all this weight, and then I got, like, really used to being really thin, and I really enjoyed being really, really thin. And I got really attached to being thin. Now, I didn't realize this, okay, but just as suddenly as I lost that 10 pounds and I went into that menopause phase, 3 months ago, I suddenly gained 10 pounds and started cycling again on a very regular basis. And what was interesting is I had kind of put a prayer out there to God, and I was like, God, you know what? If you need me to gain weight to get, like, a little more sanity in my head about, you know, because I noticed, like, I was afraid I might gain weight. And I just noticed I had a lot of personal thinking around my body. And my food was down, but I had a lot of personal thinking about my body. And then suddenly, and it freaked me out. And I got really scared. But I started to notice, wow, I have, and actually a friend of mine in the program was like happy I gained the 10 pounds because she thought I was too thin. She's like, my God, you were like too thin. I didn't look like emaciated, but I was like very, very thin. And I started to realize when I started to gain this understanding about, like, what's going on in my head is taking up space. And here's the other thing. I don't know about any of you, but, like, I can't force the thought out of my head, okay? I see a lot of people trying to do that, and I've tried. But, like, you know when I can get a thought out of my head? When I'm in a really good place. It's easy to get a thought out of my head. I could try to distract myself with a gratitude list and things like that. And you know what? There are times where that works, but there are times where it doesn't. Why? Because I'm so crowded in my head that I can't. I'm not in that good space. So it's easy when it's easy. It's a little bit easy when it's a little bit easy. And it's really hard when it's really hard. So there's something else going on besides me doing it, me pushing it out of my head. You know, I have a friend in the program who would say, just go wash your car. Like, just go out and wash your car. Apparently, Charlie used to tell her that. She was sponsored by Charlie. And what did that mean? I didn't have to go physically wash my car. It meant, like, just go point yourself towards something else, so that your head can free up a little bit, so that a new thought can pop in, so you won't feel the way you're feeling. So I started to realize, oh my God, I have so much thought, and I started to, like, notice it, and I realized I was really attached to it. And once I started to notice it for what it is, it started to loosen its grip. Once I started to notice that it was not helpful thought, and it wasn't even true, I started to notice there were a lot of people that were in larger body sizes than me that were like really happy. And that this is really not about weight loss, this program. This is really about peace of mind inside, and that's going to come in all shapes and sizes. And naturally, people are going to, when they know better, when they feel better, they do better. And I started to get so much peace around my body, so much less concern around my food and when it was time for me to eat my food, or was there going to be my food available? I never expected this, but this is what's happened to me as a result, I believe, of step 11. So I've experienced these promises. So this feeling of neutrality, I have to tell you, I'm like neutral. I feel safe and protected. I haven't sworn off. It's not a problem. It's really not a problem. The problem has been removed. It's not like, as long as I weigh and I measure my food, I won't have a problem. It's not even that. It's like, I don't have a problem. So I know things that are not good for me, and I don't go to those. And I can't even, like, I'm trying to explain it, and I can't even. I want to wrap up by sharing. So it says here, we're on a spiritual program of action. What is fit spiritual condition? What's spiritual? Spiritual is connecting with that part of me that's connected to God, right? That we all have that. Whatever's keeping us breathing, whatever's keeping us moving, whatever's keeping us thinking is connected to that. And it's asking me to. So, you know, what I like to think now is, like, we're not cured of alcoholism. I'm not cured of humanism. I'm not cured of being a human being, right? What I need to do is realize that I'm connected to the spiritual, and that is what's going to fuel my that big T. That I want to be connected to the big T. I want to be thinking in the big T. I want to be thinking for the team, right? Not just about me, what's right for me in my little world. I want to be thinking bigger than that, because that's where I get strength, inspiration, and direction, right? So it says on the bottom of 85, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him, meaning God, or the power of the universe, who has all knowledge and power, right? So if we've carefully followed these directions, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit. So here's a very interesting thought that I had, and I'm still thinking about it. Like, I'm just getting really curious about it. A lot of times we tell people, and this has never sat right with me, but like we get really hung up on the 12th step where it says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of the steps. Right? We try to carry the message and practice the principles. But it's telling me here in step 11, which comes right before that, what I just said, it says to some extent we have become God conscious. If we've carefully followed the directions, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. But we have to go further. Meaning we have to keep pointing ourselves towards that. And it gives us this ability. This is the work. This is really the action. It's just pointing myself in this direction. So it tells me to, like, realize, you know, or were we thinking? What was I thinking, right? It gives me, you know, was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? That's all thinking. Was I thinking about me? And what happened already, and what you did to me, and how that offends me, or how what might happen, or that if I just say this instead of that, this might happen, right? It's asking what was my thinking like, or was I kind and loving? Kind and loving is a byproduct of pure thinking, pure meaning, not in that personal thinking, right? Was I doing for others, right? But I'm not going to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, because that diminishes my usefulness. Why? Because worry, remorse, and morbid reflection is more personal thinking. And then I just ask God, you know, what if I hurt anybody? You know, forgive me. And if there's something I need to do to make it better, help me do that. And then here's really powerful stuff, right? When I wake up in the morning, it says, before we begin, ask God to direct my thinking. God, help me to not, what's self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking? Self-seeking. It's all personal thinking. It's saying, God, I want you to direct my thinking. I want my thinking to be based on your thought, capital T. Let that flow through me. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculty, my brain, which is different than my mind from my understanding. Mind, I'm not going to get into that now, but that's a very different. My brain is my mental faculty. I can use that brain with much better effectiveness if what I'm inputting, if I can think of my brain like a computer. These are just, again, I'm just using metaphors that I see, and you know, maybe you'll see something of what I'm saying. Whatever I put in this computer is what's going to be spit out, right? Or if you think of the old-time movie reels, movie projectors, whatever I roll on the film is what's going to come out. If we put Wizard of Oz on the film, on the reel, that's what's going to be on the screen. That's what I'm going to see. If we put, you know, Jaws on the, that's what we're going to see, right? If I put Frankenstein on the reel, that's what I'm going to see. So if I put love and understanding on the reel, that's what I'm going to see. If I put God on my reel, that's what I'm going to see. I'm going to see God in everything. I'm going to see it in you. I'm going to see it in my kids. I'm going to see it in the nature. But if I put resentment and judgment and yesterday's hurt on my reel, guess what I'm going to see? So it's asking, and then it says, I've always loved this, our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. When I'm not thinking about me and my own personal thinking, and instead point myself in a direction of healthier thinking, more well-being, I get more well-being. And if I don't know what to do, and thinking about our day, we may face indecision, not sure what to do, I can just point myself back toward God for new ideas. So it says we ask God for inspiration and intuitive thought of our decision. And then what does it say? It doesn't say, and then we try to think what's coming in our brain, because then no, that would be more personal thinking. It says, I relax and take it easy and I don't struggle. And I'm often surprised, which I'm not anymore, although sometimes I'm even like, oh my God, look at that, how it worked. The answers come after I've tried this for a while. Tried what? Tried to let go, just to try to see my personal thinking for what it is. Right? What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. And sometimes I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to do stupid things. Why? Because it seems like a good idea at the time. It tells us this. I'm not going to be inspired all times. I'm going to make mistakes. But as I keep pointing myself towards this, as time passes, I'm going to find I'm more and more in the plane of inspiration. And I rely on that. And this, I will tell you, is my experience. And this is my experience. And I love at the bottom, you know, and I do pray, I do have I'll be honest with you, I did meditation for many, many years up until a very short time ago where I would like do this meditation. And what I found for me is trying to be in the moment, I wasn't actually in the moment, right? In fact, here, try this one on. This is a new realization I had. Trying to be God conscious, I'm not actually being God conscious because I'm thinking about being God conscious. So if I'm trying to be it, I'm not actually in that moment. So what's been happening for me is which is really, really cool, which I believe is really a result of this 11th step and pointing myself in this direction and understanding really what's going on with that. Really, my thinking is just an illusion. It's just how I see the world at the moment, just for that moment. And the next moment, a new thought's going to come in, and that they pass is my thought just fell out of my head, but I think I was talking about trying to be God conscious. I wasn't actually being God conscious. Oh, I know what to say. That my praying has changed even. I used to pray with like desperation, please God help me to clean sober and abstinent, blah, 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 you know, and I would, and now I'm it's much more, it just feels better. You know, it feels really good. And it feels really, I feel this, I just have this feeling of, I guess that those promises. So then it tells me, so I do my daily prayers and meditate, because I do that. I don't really meditate so much, because I was meditating. It was like sitting, trying to be present. And what I've been finding is like thinking about being present, I'm actually not present because I'm thinking about it. So I've been experiencing more being in the present, and that's been really cool. Sometimes I do part of the meditation when I run. I have some things that I kind of let flow through my brain, and a Jewish meditation that I do, and I'll do that when I run, or sometimes when I'm sitting, but I don't feel like I like tied to it. And then it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful, and I'm going to close with this. We pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we're no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done. We're then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, and foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We don't tire so easily, for we're not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It really works. Trying to arrange life to suit myself can also be trying to be really spiritual and trying to be really God conscious and trying to be a really good OA member and trying to work with others, right? Like there's a lot of excitement in there, right? It's telling me that I'm in much less danger of that when agitated or doubtful, pause. What is agitation or doubtful? It's a feeling I get that's telling me that my thinking is probably not in a very good state and that I want to have a fresh new idea come in from the source of all thought. And so what I do is I use that as a barometer to then point me back toward where I want my thoughts to be coming from. Oh, okay, I'm agitated or doubtful. It must be I'm in some kind of thought. I don't have to look at the thought. I don't have to tear it apart. I don't have to do a four-step on it. It's not necessary. All I have to do is point myself back, and that's what the 11th step tells me. So what's thinking got to do with it? All of it. And my choice gets to be, do I want to point myself toward the little t, my personal thinking, or do I want to point myself toward the big thinker, whatever you may call that. Anyway, that's all I have to share today.
Thank you so much, Chaya, for sharing your insights with us, your experience, strength, and hope regarding the 12-step process this morning. We thank you for your time and your effort and all your service.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Chaya's, thank you. Chaya's contact information will be offered at the conclusion of this recording. And now we're going to open up for question and answers. If you have a question for Chaya this morning, please press star 1 to unmute and identify yourself, please. star 1 to unmute if you have any questions.
Yes, this is Sherry from Massachusetts.
Hi, Sherry. Hold on.
Hi, it's Betty Ann.
What's the second name? I'm sorry.
Betty Ann.
Betty Ann. Okay. Anyone else? Sorry for the echo. Okay, let's go with Sherry, please, first.
Hi, I'm Sherry from Massachusetts. I'm a compulsive overeater and an alcoholic. And it was great to hear Haya today about what does thinking have to do with it. You know, drives it home for me because I have gone through the process with an AA sponsor, the Big Book Step Study process with an AA sponsor, and I was picking up the food and putting it down, picking up, putting it down. So I've decided that I'm going to go through that process again. I do have 28 years of sobriety and with alcohol, and I've been struggling with the food throughout my whole existence of my sobriety and AA. I have finally, and I feel it's one day at a time, realized that this food thing that I have is an allergy, and I have an allergy to it just like I have an allergy to alcohol and drugs. But I never believed that before. My question for Haya today is, I am an active member in OA and AA, and I always struggle with the meditation part. I have bought meditation tapes and meditation this and meditation that, and I sit in the morning with God and I say my prayers and I do some writing and gratitudes and pray for friends and pray for family members, and then I just say, you know, be still and know that I am God. But, you know, I have people in my OA program that do this for a half hour, and I'm, like, blown away because I can barely get 4 minutes in just to sit there and think of nothing. It's hard. I can't even think to get to 30 minutes. But with my reading and writing and praying, I'm sitting and doing these things for a half hour, but I'm not sitting and having a clear mind for a half hour. So it was just kind of, my question is, I just wanted you to maybe talk a little bit more, if you could, about the meditation piece that you were talking about at the end, because I am where I am now with my abstinence, I'm in a really good place, and I am abstinent. I am so scared that if I don't sit there for a half hour, that I'm going to lose my abstinence, because that's one of the tools that I just can't get. I have phone calls, I have meetings, I do everything else, but I can't get that half hour or 30 minutes of just sitting there empty-headed. Now, there's other times that I meet with God during the day when I go out running like you, or I go out hiking, or, you know, I do physical activity, and in the morning and on my way home, and in other times I have a conscious contact with God. So, yeah, I just wanted to, that was my question. I'm afraid that will I lose my abstinence if I don't get that 30 minutes in.
Thank you so much for the question. I think you answered it yourself, actually, in that last piece. You know, so my experience with telling people, if you don't do this, you're going to do that, you're going to eat, you're going to lose it, blah, 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 I have never found to be helpful. Mainly because I don't really know what's best for everybody. I can share with you a little bit of experience on meditation, but I was really touched, and I would invite you to be curious about, you know, there was something, I don't know if everybody else on the line felt it, and I don't know if you felt it. Sherry, is it Sherry? Is that your name?
Yes, Sherry.
If you felt that feeling, that shift, there was a shift in feeling when you described when you were hiking or walking, or that, you know, throughout the day where you feel that God consciousness. It was like a feeling shift for me. That's what we're pointing ourselves towards. So however it comes, you know, whether it's sitting in the morning. Now, I will tell you, I don't know any human being on the planet that has no thought come in their head for 30 minutes unless God decides to put absolutely no thought in their head for 30 minutes. I can't try to not think for 30 minutes. That would, again, be thinking. So my experience of meditation, when I learned how to meditate originally 25 years ago or something, we were, you know, given a mantra to kind of pay attention to, which I don't use that mantra. It was a, I came to understand it was a form of idol worship, which I don't do. But I do use, I use a Jewish, some Jewish phrases that I'll let flow through my head. And what I learned and what, and any form of formal meditation is going to tell you, you kind of point yourself toward that. And then when you notice that you're not there, you kind of point yourself back. It's like a GPS, you know. It's like a, you know, I'm not a pilot, but what I understand from flying a plane is they have this course that they're, that they go on, and it's just constant adjustments. Then they notice, oh, they've gone a little bit off course, then they get back on course. They notice they've gone a little bit off course, so they get back on course. So I think that's what meditation, it's just a pointing towards. It's, remember it said God could and would if he were sought. And the other thing I would get curious about is, you know, how helpful is that fear? You know, I'll tell you, I was doing, and I know a lot of people that have, I'm telling you, I said I was very conservative when I said I get a call once a week from somebody who's been, I don't know if I completed my sentence about that, maybe I lost my train of thought, but I get a call probably at least once a week, if not more, from people that have been in the program for years and years and years and are still struggling with either a facet of their abstinence or a facet of their thinking. And they've been doing everything that the book is telling them to do. So it's not a doing that produces it. Remember, Bill Wilson had that spiritual experience like immediately. By the way, I mean, whatever, it's a whole other discussion. But the, so, like, somebody called me the other day and they were like, well, I want to do it again, you know, and I, they were describing, you know, I've done this and I've done this, but, you know, like, I'm not feeling it, so I got to do it again. And I was like, why would you want to do again something that, like, you've been doing over and over and isn't working? It's like trying to, like, pick a scab expecting it to heal. Like, why would you do that? Like, maybe, like, let it be and point yourself in another direction. So, you know, and the direction that the book is always asking us to point towards is God. And it says we don't have a monopoly here. You know, this is just, this is pointing us toward God consciousness, God, the big, you know, the bigger picture. So meditation, the book doesn't tell us to sit for 30 minutes in the morning. It doesn't say that anywhere, right? It's so somebody came up with this idea, and if somebody tells you, you know, if I'm with a sponsor, you have to sit for 30 minutes in the morning, okay, you could do that if you want, but that's not gonna, that might have produced their spiritual experience, or they may think that produced their spiritual experience, or they may enjoy it, or they may actually hate it, but they do it anyway, either because somebody told them they have to do it and they're so scared they're gonna eat if they don't do it, or whatever reason. So I would, you know, the point is to be pointing back to our own wisdom that's connected to God. So I would really get curious about what that good feeling is that you get when that comes over, and I get curious about that, and I'd want more of that. You know, I want to be high on that stuff. You know, I want to be high on that. I want a hit of that, right, so to speak. You know, from the I live in Colorado, so it's all about, you know, I guess that's the word, a hit. You know, on, we have legalized marijuana here, so that's a little joke. People make jokes with me all the time about it. That's why you moved to Colorado. But I get curious about that. And then in terms of the 30 minutes of meditation, I mean, no one's sitting there 30 minutes with nothing dropping in their head. That's just not happening, as long if they're a human. There are moments, there could be longer periods. I've experienced long periods where I didn't even realize I was thinking. So I wasn't in my personal thinking. I was in some kind of zone. But I didn't make myself get there. I just put myself in a position to maybe be there. So wherever it works, whatever gets me that good feeling, if you feel better, and that's why we don't have to go back to the food, because we feel better. If you feel better, you don't want to do that to yourself. So
thank you.
That's what I want to say about that.
Thank you very much, Sherry. Okay, Betty Ann, your turn.
Okay, thank you. Kaya, I tell you, you said exactly what I needed to hear today. I want to know, maybe I'm asking too much, but I've been abstinent by the grace of God like for 4.5 years now. And by now I have that second. When I'm really upset and I have a food thought, I have that second where I say, "What's going on? What's the matter with you?" But with emotional sobriety, when I feel triggered or hurt or vulnerable, and I'm in a good place, it's good, and I feel connected with God and all that. But when I'm not, and I'm upset, and I'm triggered by my husband or a person or something, I need that second, which I don't think I have yet. Any advice on that?
Well, I'm not going to give you advice because I once heard a joke where someone said, "Take my advice. I'm not using it anyway." but I actually try to, you know, but I can try to tell you how I see it and what my experience has been, and if you see something in that, then terrific. So I could really identify with that, with, you know, being triggered by whatever's going on around me and then trying to, you know, being like, okay, what's going on and why am I bothered by this? And I have to be honest with you that never really helped me very much. Sometimes maybe it made a little bit, it allowed me to get a little bit of perspective. What's been much more helpful for me was understanding the nature of thought as opposed to the content of my thought. And so what I started to understand with the nature of thought is that thought comes in, and that it comes from God, too. Everything's coming from that source, because before my thought, what is there? Where does that come from, right? So good, bad, or ugly, it comes in, and I feel it through my senses. At every moment, we are feeling our thinking, right? We're experiencing the feeling of our thinking. And it comes through me, and then it passes through, and then I'm on the next one. And so instead of trying to examine why I'm feeling this way and what could be fueling it and blah, 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 that wasn't really doing it for me. It was actually pointing myself more towards the not feeling good piece, because I was like, I was really relishing in it in some way, even with a good motive. What's been more helpful is understanding, oh, okay, so my thinking probably isn't so on right now. How do I know that? Because if I'm anxious or angry or resentful, then then my thinking is just off. See, the other piece that I understood, that I've come to understand, is it's never the outside circumstance, ever, ever. It is always my experience from the inside. How do I know this? Because then you said it, but Anne was like, when I'm good, it can just kind of, it just goes. That's no big deal, right? That's why, you know, why is it that like one morning I can wake up and look at my husband and be like, oh, why is he like still in bed? Or, you know, oh, you know, and then I go downstairs and I see my children. And I'm like, oh my God, I cannot wait till they're 18 and they're out of the house. Well, actually, they're 18 and they're still in the house. Some of them, right? Like, I cannot, like, when am I going to have my freedom? And then I go to my job, which, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, like, what? Who hired these people? You know, and then something, you know, my day, I come home, maybe I get a better night's sleep or a good night's sleep, and then I wake up the next morning and I roll over and I see my husband and I'm like, oh, I am the luckiest woman in the world. Oh my gosh, how did I find such an amazing guy? And I go down to my
kids. I'm helping them with getting ready for school. And I'm like, oh, my God, the years are going to go by so fast, and they're going to be out of the house, you know. And then I go to work, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is the best job. I work with the most amazing people. Why? How is that possible? That, like, the same circumstances, but yet I'm experiencing so differently. So it's not the outside circumstances. It's inside. That's what the book is trying to – that's what the steps try to show us. We look at it from a completely different angle. We see it had nothing to do with what was going on outside. It was my inside. So when I started to understand not the content wasn't so important, that it was more the nature of my thought, like, okay, so I'm not in a great space at this moment, but you know what? If I like keep thinking about not being in a great space and then start calling everybody, you know, I'm really not in a great space, guess what? I'm just filling myself up with more of that, which does not make any room for new thought and God to come in. So that's really helped me, and it was life-changing for me. And maybe you'll see something in that.
Thank you, Betty Ann, for your question. Anyone else with a question this morning?
This is Janice B. I have a question.
Judith B., is that what I heard?
Janice.
Janice, okay. And anyone else? Star one to unmute.
Deborah R.
Deborah R. Anyone else? Last chance.
AJ?
Who's this?
AJ?
AJ. Okay, AJ. Anyone else?
Sarah W.
Sarah W.
Thank you, Leah.
Pleasure.
Francis P.
Okay. All right, you got in there. Okay, Janice B., let's start with you.
Okay, thank you, Leah. And thank you, Haya, for your great share this morning. I can relate to so much of it. One of the things that I heard you talk about was the nightly review. And I struggle with doing the nightly review. I find I'm sitting there and I forget what I've done during the day, and I like rack my brain. Where was I resentful? Where was I selfish? And it's like, it's focusing on the negative things, and I do that a lot. I know what you focus on grows, and I believe that. And so how do you do your nightly review? And that's my question. Thank you.
Thank you for the question. Well, what comes to mind to me is, if it's not helpful, why do I keep doing something that's not helpful? Or it could be that it is helpful, I just don't see the benefit necessarily. I used to be very vigilant. In fact, I would email my nightly review, but I was finding that it was like the same thing every night on the nightly review. I would answer the questions out of the book. I think it's a good place to start. You know, that's what it's giving us. The stuff they're giving us in the big book is just, ideas about what you might want to do. But what's much more helpful to me, I just don't go to bed with a whole lot on my mind today as a result of this understanding that I have. So, and when I do, I usually will not want to go tearing that apart. I don't really do a nightly review, a formal nightly review. It wasn't helping me in any way. It just wasn't helping me. It wasn't giving me more well-being. I'm not saying that it wouldn't, that everybody's like that. For sure, that's not the case.
every individual needs to find what speaks to them. It's a little scary for me when I hear people in program, I'm not saying you're like this, but I'm saying when I hear, it just comes to mind this thought to say this, when I hear people in program for so many years who are still, you know, following the dictates of their sponsor, it's just, I don't think that, there wasn't even the word sponsor when these guys were getting sober, right? It was just helping people point them back to their own inner wisdom, that source, that they're, you know, that connection. Obviously, we need each other and we can bounce things off each other. And sometimes I may, you know, turn to someone and say, can you, you know, like, I need to, having trouble with this. And, you know, whether it's a sponsor or, you know, my professional life is in this realm and I seek it out myself when I need it. But I just don't think there's a hard and fast way. That's been my experience. So I would say pay attention and get curious about what is working as opposed to trying to force something that's not. That's what I have to say on that.
Thank you, Janice. Deborah R., your question, please.
Good morning, Vision for You. Fellows, this is Deborah R. from Michigan. And Hyatt, thank you very much for your share this morning. I've already written my notes in my book about your thinking. That to me, really hit home. And my question for you is, I am well aware that many things trigger me. It's more my judgment of myself than others. And wondered if you wrestled with that character defect and if you found any tips or tricks or inspiration on how to turn that around faster and to truly hand it over in step 7, because I still find myself being critical, not only of me, but others. And thank you again for your share today.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so I just want to make sure I understand the question. So when you find yourself being critical or judgmental of others, what are some of the things I do to help me flip that around?
Yeah,
is that the question?
Turn it around, yeah. I'm used to 10-step turnarounds during the day of being, tolerant, loving, accepting.
Yeah.
I just wanted to up my tone and stretch it out.
I could speak to that for a minute. I might have already spoken to it a little bit earlier. So, what's been really helpful to me, and again, it kind of has to do with what I said before. And like, I don't have a whole lot of ideas. It's really like the same simple ones that seem to work for me. So I'm probably going to be saying the same thing, maybe just in a different way. When I'm being judgmental, the best thing that's been helpful to me, better than trying to again look at the content of why or what is it about, you know, and pulling it apart, what's been really helpful to me is just knowing from the get-go that is just contaminated thought. It's just not true, and it's my own personal thought in the moment, and it's coming out, it's expressing itself as judgment. And any if its expression is judgment, then it's not a well-being thought. And to understand that my thinking is really not even like real. Like how do I know it's not real? Because like an example I gave before about, you know, one day I can wake up and my husband is like the most amazing thing in the world that I'm so grateful for. And the next day I can wake up and be like, what was I thinking when I married him? You know what I mean? Like, so what is it? It's not the content. It's the state I'm in at that moment. So what I've really gotten a lot of help with is, and this is why I think the book says to us, you know, why is it so helpful to go work with another alcoholic when all else fails? Because when I'm in my own personal thinking and I can't seem to, you know, and I recognize, ooh, I'm in a lot of judgment today. You know, usually if I'm in a lot of judgment, I say to my kids, not like, do you think I'm a good person to talk to right now? Like, not a good person right now. You know, like, if I'm just in that place where I'm not able to just get out of it and I can't really, for some reason, I'm still in that personal thought. It's still coming in, and even though I'm just letting it flow through me, it's still kind of affecting me in that moment. I just lean in as opposed to trying to fight it. I just kind of lean in and go, okay, this is where I am. And then I kind of warn everyone around me, I'm not in such a great thinking state. And so, and I'll try to go to my room and take some quiet time or read or go do something that kind of, or go help somebody with something else. And it, and until that feeling passes, until that thinking passes, my thoughts and my feelings are exactly the same thing. They're one and the same. My feelings are just the expression of my physical, visceral expression of my thinking. So understanding that has made such a huge difference for me. I can't always get myself to be not judgmental. But what I can know is when I'm being judgmental, I'm just not in a plane of inspiration at the moment. And that's exactly God's will at that moment too. I can't think myself out of it. And because, you know, and I will just point myself towards what I know is true. And just understanding this somehow works on me and helps me kind of make it until the next moment where that lifts. And I didn't do that. I think it just, it's natural. If you actually survey your day, you'll find that we got a gazillion things coming through, and some we pay attention to and some we don't, and some we feel, and, you know, and there's plenty of time during the day where we're in that really good place. It's not all bad. And I want to point towards that. So I don't know if that helped, but that was
thank you.
That's the best way I could explain it.
Thank you, Deborah R. AJ, please, your question.
Hi, this is AJ. I am struggling big time with step 10. I find if I call somebody, you know, I write it out on paper and then I call somebody, I always feel, it seems like I feel worse afterwards than better. So I really identify with what you were saying. If I call somebody and just get my mind off what's bothering me, then I feel better. But then I think, am I just hiding what was the issue? I just, I'm curious about your, like, do you do a lot of formal step 10s? I think you kind of addressed that you don't. And the other thing I struggle with is, you know, waking up in the morning, just always depressed. You know, when I was eating, I'd be depressed, but then I'd diet and I'd feel great. So I always had these feelings in the morning. Now I just wake up, just, you know, since I've been absent for a while, just on an even keel, but it's not a happy feeling. I want to wake up happy. Just curious what you experienced with that.
So good to hear your voice, AJ. So I, again, I wouldn't keep picking a scab and expecting it to heal. So if, you know, I'd really just get curious about that. I think that sometimes people get, you know, my experience is I was, oh my God, maybe I'm in denial and blah, 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 blah. It's like, you know what? Like, I just don't go there. I think what's supposed to be revealed gets revealed. And so if it's helpful for me to talk to someone about it, I talk it through. What's been most helpful for me is understanding the nature of it as opposed to the content so much. I find that things that need to be talked about will get talked about. And what's been most helpful to me is not looking back, but looking forward and being in the now, and not even trying to be in the now. But that allows me to be in the now. As far as waking up happy, so I have two things to say about that. One is I've gone through depression, and one of the things I know is that I had a whole lot of thought about that, and when I don't put so much, but like if I wake up like in a low mood, not putting a whole lot of judgment on that, and just knowing that it's that that putting judgment on the mood is just going to make the mood worse. It's kind of like making a phone call about how bad you feel, which makes you feel worse, perhaps. Somebody else might feel better if they make a phone call, right? But so I'd just get curious about what all the thinking you might have around, you know, not waking up and happy. What does that mean? What does happy mean, you know? And the other piece is some people benefit, myself included, from medication if there is some kind of chemical imbalance going on. And sometimes it's hereditary and sometimes it's temporary and sometimes it's, you know, but that's, you know, sometimes it's necessary and to help access that thinking, that better thinking, because if the chemicals are off, everything is connected. Our bodies and it's all connected. So if I'm in a big habit of thought that keeps me down, that's going to affect all the chemicals in my body. And if that's where I'm at, then sometimes in order to then kind of get bounced back from that state, you know, I might need some alterations in that. So there's professionals that help us in that realm. And since the 12-step program has no opinion on outside issues, it is an outside issue. So it's not for someone to tell you you should or you shouldn't. That's really for your own, what's right for you. So that's what I would say.
Thanks, AJ, for the question. Sarah W., please, your turn with a question.
Thank you so much, Leah, for your service. Good morning, Kaya. Thank you for your beautiful, inspirational share. Sarah W., grateful, recovered, compulsive reader. You know, in guiding and helping others, and I've heard you so many times on the line, you're so nurturing and loving as far as newcomers and that. I wanted to just talk about sometimes when we get somebody that's new or that's coming back, you know, the huge amount of emotional pain that people are going through in their lives, whether it be from exogenous circumstances, outside issues, or from within. And so when you start to talk to them, they're very, you know, in deep pain about maybe some very real things. And, you know, if we're really assisting people and our purpose is to, you know, be of service to God and others, I'm wondering how you, you know, keep the focus on helping them through the steps and at the same time allow them to be heard. And, you know, I don't know exactly how to word the question, but I think you're probably getting my gist.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you for the question. So I'll just say one thing, and that is in my experience, it's all coming from within. None of it's the outside. They may have, people go through circumstances, people have had things happen in their life, traumatic things and what have you, but whatever happened, and they were very real at the time, whatever they're experiencing today is thinking about it from within. It's not happening now, you know. Even if they're currently in, let's say, an abusive situation, at that moment that we're talking about it, it's not happening. So that's what the book is trying to point us towards. It's trying to point us towards, you know, being able to be present. And that's a whole other conversation. And not something that I really do as a sponsor. That's a whole professional thing. You know, people need to, you know, that's just a whole other story. But everybody's experience feels real, feels really, 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 really real. And so just being with people in that space is, and wherever they're at, you know, I'm just a big believer in taking people where they're at. That's why, you know, I don't, you know, someone once told me, well, I won't sponsor, a good friend of mine actually said, I won't sponsor anybody who drinks coffee. And I said, why wouldn't you sponsor anybody who drinks coffee? And this is her experience, and it's totally fine for her. She just said, well, it's a drug, and, you know, I want people to be totally off all their drugs. And my feeling was like, you know, when those alcoholics got sober, all they did was stop drinking, you know. Like, you know, to me that would be like having oral surgery without any anesthesia, you know. Like people come to their own, when people start to feel better, they do better. So things have been peeled away over the years. So I don't know if, I'm not sure why I brought that up, but it's kind of like taking people where they're at, you know. For some people, for me, when I first started in OA, just eating three meals a day was a novel concept. Just three meals was novel to me. To have a meal was novel to me. I just grazed all day. So if somebody would, you know, like, so there's just, you got to take people where they're at. Sometimes people aren't ready for certain things. So it's really, it's listening. That's what the, working with others asks us to do. It asks us to listen. And it asks us to make a friend, to take people where they're at. And if they're not, look, if they don't want what I have, meaning what I have to offer, you can't have what I have because it's my experience. I can't give you what I have. I can only share with you what I see and point you toward that so that you can see something. That's what I do. And I do that with my kids, and I do that with my husband, and I do that with my coworkers and with the people I coach. I try to help, try to point them toward that. So I hope that answered the question.
Thank you, Sarah W. And our last question for the morning will come from Francis. Your turn, Francis.
Good morning, Haya. Good morning, Leia. Thank you so much for your share. I came on the line late, and I will re-listen to the recorded version. But what I heard from you was so inspiring that, you know, for me, for today, for now, I need to keep it simple. So, you know, I'm going to ask you to offer me or anyone else on the line. My question is, do you have single words that bring you back to your centeredness when you feel you're going astray? For instance, you know, mine, I heard you say, be still. You know, another one is pause. Another one is help God. You know, so there can be many things, because I can pick up a hammer and beat myself over the head when something's going wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, more important
than anything.
That's
really helpful, isn't it?
Yeah, really.
That's real helpful.
You know, a long time ago in therapy, I had a group facilitator say, just remind yourself. Incorrect thought process. So I never forgot that. You know. That's it.
Well,
thank
you. My pleasure. So I heard a great thing in a book I read which said, you know, if, I'm just paraphrasing at the moment, like if you find yourself in judgment, anger, anxiety, don't take yourself so seriously. And actually in the 12 and 12 it says that, you know, don't take yourself so seriously. So that's been really helpful, is understanding again that it's not reality. A colleague of mine said he was coaching a client and he was saying, you know, so he was explaining like these kind of ideas, and the guy said, you mean to tell me that like pretty much everything I've been thinking is like a mirage? And my colleague goes, yeah, pretty much, you know. And he goes, but it's so real. It looks so real. And he goes, yeah, it's a real mirage. You know, like, it looks so real that everybody was hurting me. It looks so real that my husband was being, he was holding me back from something. It looks so real that my child was trying to manipulate me. You know, yeah, it looked really, really real. It was a real mirage. My experience was 100% coming from inside me. And And my barometer of whether or not to take myself seriously or not is the kind of feelings I'm feeling. It's kind of like I have, we'll close with this. I mean, I'm not in a rush, but I know at some point we need to end. You know, the joke in my house is that my smoke alarm is my cooking timer, okay? But in the house, we're in a new house now that we just moved in. Like, the smoke alarm is, like, really loud, and it's, like, hard to turn it off, you know? So I've been, one day I just had this metaphor, and I realized my feelings are smoke. So what happens when the smoke alarm goes off? It's telling me I'm burning something, right? It's telling me the flame's too high. This is not good, right? If my cooking temperature is good, if there's well-being going on in the oven, the smoke alarm doesn't go off, okay? If there's something burning in the oven, the smoke alarm goes off. If, God forbid, there's a fire in my house, a real fire, that's what it's really for, okay? So what I realized is that my feelings are like the smoke alarm for me. It's an indicator, and what is it? What happens if there's a fire? Get out of the house. Don't stay there and you know, bask in it and roll around in it and look towards it. Get out of the house. If my fish is burning or the vegetables are burning or whatever it is that I'm burning at the moment, turn down the oven, turn it off, open the window, right, and fan the thing. Get it off. It's showing me something's wrong. Don't, you know. So my feelings now, I see, are just a barometer. That's why it says pause when agitated or doubtful. It's saying don't take yourself so seriously. Don't take your thinking so seriously when you're agitated or doubtful, because it's not true. It's not going to lead you where you really want to go, which is towards well-being. So not taking myself seriously has been really helpful. And guess what? I don't burn anything anymore because I really want the smoke detector to be there when it really for something real, first of all, which is why we have those feelings. You know, there is a healthy fear. If I'm taking my kid to a sleepover and that opens the door and I get a creepy feeling from the man who's, you know, the father of the house, that's an indicator for me, you know what, sorry, but we're not going to be staying. We need that. But I need it to be available to me to really let me know what's going on. So most of the time, it's just don't take yourself so seriously. And that allows me to take seriously when it is real. When it's coming from wisdom as opposed to coming from thinking. So not taking myself seriously has been really happy. Laughing and going, oh, there went a judgmental thought. Ooh, look at that flowing through me. Woo, you know. If I was in a car on a boat or in a plane and it's going bumping, right, where the boat is like going up and down, that could be very scary. But if I'm on the cyclone in Coney Island, if it still exists, and I get on that roller coaster, I know it's going to go up and down, and it's thrilling. Life can be really thrilling, and that's what the book tells us, right? Life is thrilling. Life is a full contact sport. I want to feel all of it. I'm going to feel the downs, and I'm going to feel the ups, and guess what? They're going to go up and down and move through me. That is what being a human being is. I don't have to attach myself to something that already happened. If I'm on the new going up, I don't have to be thinking about the last hill I just came down on, right? It's like this new is a new thing, and there'll be ups and downs, and I can let it all flow through me without fear because the next thing is going to come next. And if I'm present to, you know, if I'm clear, I don't know. I feel like I'm saying more than I need to. That's all I need. That's all. I feel like now I'm talking from my own thinking, and I don't want to do that.
Thank you so much, Chaya, for your insights this morning and for examples of your experience and speaking about the transformation that you have experienced as a result of the program of recovery. We thank you. Thanks to everybody who asked questions this morning, and we will close now from the page 164 in our big book.
Leah, can I say one more thing? I just want to say one thing.
Of course.
And that is somewhat... Sorry to interrupt you. Somebody said, I think the last speaker said, you know, you inspired me. And I just want to say that I don't inspire. Inspire comes from within. So it was all you. If you heard something, it was you. You have that in you. It wasn't that I did something and that it came from me. It might have been triggered by something you heard that I said, but if you did not have that capacity in you, you wouldn't have been able to hear it or see it. So I just want to give give it back to all of you. Not about me being a great speaker and blah, blah, blah. It's about you being able to see it. And if you saw something, I'm so happy that you did. And if you didn't, just keep pointing yourself toward that well-being, and you will eventually. Thanks.
Thank you, Chaya. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.